Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Current Issues. I'm your host, Hisham Tilawi. We're coming to you live from the Republic Broadcasting Network. And I'm going to make a few comments about Virginia Tech. I'm sure you're tired of hearing 24 hours coverage of what went on. But we're not going to cover it as the news media covers it, and that's not what we're going to talk about. I'm just going to make a couple of comments on that today, and then we will be speaking with Lenny Brenner about what is going on in the Middle East and what is going on. But let me make a few comments about the Virginia Tech. Number one, it is what happened is sad, it is shocking, and it's a tragedy. And I don't know how you feel about how the media had covered that event and what went on in that event. And also, you know, few questions, actually lots of questions would be, I guess the result of what is happening, ladies and gentlemen, we'll probably be looking at a big debate going on in the country about gun control, and that's probably the catalyst that gun control people have been waiting for. And this is probably, as it happened back in 1996 in Australia, with the Port Arthur massacre, I believe people will be using what happened at Virginia Tech as the reason or where we will be going with gun control and gun control laws. Of course, the debate can be, you can understand both sides of the debate, but I think, you know, there's a lot more than just in our rights to guns. But, you know, a couple of questions that I have. I want to know who trained this guy. This guy just bought a gun about a month ago. But definitely from the results from what we are seeing, definitely he's an expert on using guns, an expert on fighting. So definitely that question needs to be answered. And also the way the media covered the news, you know, the first day we were told about the Holocaust survivor who did a heroic job by closing the door and being shot in the process, but ended up saving some of his students. But also there was another student there who died. This student happened to be a Muslim. His name is Waleed Shahlan. You probably did not hear about him, did not hear about what he did. But one of the students there wanted his family to know, one of the students who survived, wanted Waleed's family to know that their son had saved his life. And as a matter of fact, from the reports that I've seen, which you did not see because Waleed was a Muslim, and of course, you know, the media is not going to promote a Muslim doing something good, but he was probably the only one. Of course, you know, we don't have the whole story with us yet, but in the beginning, Waleed was shot, and everyone in the classroom kind of played dead, and the gunman came back to the classroom, and he was checking to see who was dead and who was alive. And at that point, he was going to this student who survived, but Waleed made a move, and supposedly he had an altercation with the gunman, who ended up shooting him again, and Waleed died. When we come back, I'm going to be joined with Lenny Brenner. We will talk. Well, I'll see what Lenny's thoughts about this, but we're going to go and talk about the Middle East and where we go from here. So we will be right back.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years. No change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments. No refinancing. And no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Did you hear about Joe Bannister, IRS Special Agent Criminal Investigator that quit the IRS a few years ago because the IRS failed to show him the law or legal authority for ordinary Americans like you and me to file and pay income tax?
What do you mean? Everyone knows that you have to file and pay income taxes.
Well, not only did the IRS fail to show Joe Bear a law that requires you and me to file and pay income tax when Joe was working for the IRS, but even after Joe quit IRS, the IRS failed to show up to several debates that the IRS was invited to debate Bannister about the legality of the income tax.
Wow, this is amazing information. Can I find out more about this?
Go to the website at www.livefreenow.org. That's 708-684271. And the website is www.livefreenow.org.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money control media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes exciting, in-depth, uncensored news information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN when you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priest of War. All that for just $49. Call AFP toll-free 888-699-NEWS or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. We're coming to you live from the Republic Broadcasting Network. And my guest in the first hour is Lenny Brenner. But before I go to Lenny, I just wanted to finish a thought that I started in the beginning of the show. What lesson do we learn out of this Virginia Tech? Number one, the lesson that I really personally learned, that when you walk out of your house, you don't know if you're coming back or not. I think it made me reflect on how vulnerable our lives are, and you don't need to be hit by a train or have a disease to think that you're going to die. So I think that's the lesson. The lesson two that I learned is we need to keep lunatics away from guns. And, you know, this lunatic should never – anytime a lunatic gets hold of a gun, I think we see disasters. So we need to keep guns away from the lunatics in the White House, too, because, you know, we killed about 675,000-670,000 Iraqis. And basically now we're saying, you know, oops, sorry, we made a mistake. But, you know, I was thinking about the way the media covered the tragedy at Virginia Tech. And don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to belittle what happened at Virginia Tech. And that the sorrow that the families had to endure. But at the same time, you know, the media had went and interviewed everyone and, you know, their neighbors, their cousins. They wanted to show how who these students and who these people that died. And I'm thinking, you know, that same day, 82 Iraqis died. And the next day, about 190 Iraqis died. And you do know that these Iraqis are fathers, mothers, students. It's someone's brother, someone's father. And I'm sure they endure the same sorrow as our people did here. But unfortunately, we don't hear these people and we don't know who they are because the media does not cover these people. Imagine if the media would cover the Middle East the way they covered the tragedy at Virginia Tech. Well, my guest is Lenny Brenner. He has been in the in journalism for a long, long time. He has written extensively about the Middle East and about what is happening with Zionism and what Zionism really is all about. He is also described as a self-hating Jew. He's an anti-Semite. Of course, I can't see how can someone be an anti-Semitic and at the same time being Jewish, but I guess you can throw that label on anyone that you choose to label anti-Semitism on. Eleni, welcome to the program.
Hi. Okay. With regards to my being a self-hate Jew, what I tell people is whenever somebody makes that charge is that they have to go and talk to all my ex-girlfriends who will all agree, all 50 million of them will agree that Lenny Brenner is not a self-hating Jew. Lenny Brenner is in love with himself. In fact, the only one that Lenny Brenner has ever loved was Lenny Brenner. So I'm not a self-hating Jew.
What the heck is that label? I don't even understand how can someone be a self-hating Jew. Tell me, just describe that term for me.
Well, let me put it this way.
Does it even exist?
Every ideology, every religion, etc., produces spin-offs. And can you hear me?
Yes, very well.
Okay, all right. Every ideology produces spin-offs, so In the course of Jewish history, at any number of times, you've had people who break with Judaism and decide that the religion that that they came from is the worst religion that ever happened to the world, et cetera, you know, that kind of thing. There were Jews who collaborated with the Spanish Inquisition. There were a few Jews who collaborated with the Nazis, the Zionists among them, openly offered to collaborate with the Nazis in 1933 when Hitler came to power. So a lot of these people developed a criticism of Jews, and it's so severe that it's obvious that they hate Jews. Now, I've encountered this in other nationalities. I ran into an Irishman once who, the minute you mentioned Ireland, he just started ranting and raging about how terrible the Irish were. And I ran into a Korean once who told me that between North Korea and South Korea, Korea had the two worst governments in the world. Most people have only the worst government in the world, but Korea had the two worst governments in the world, etc. And these kind of people go on. But in my particular case, I have my attitude towards Jews is and Gentiles. If you want to divide the world into you can do that. You can divide the world into Jews and Gentiles. I mean, non-Jews. The average Jew has a knit-sized brain, and the average Gentile has a gnat-sized brain. When it comes to politics, you know, I mean, they don't know what they're talking about, and they're full of fanaticism. This is a very pessimistic thing to say, but I say it about everybody, not just about Jews or Arabs or Americans, etc. Human beings are not the brightest
minds
in the universe.
Lenny, just to get started, do you have any thoughts about what took place at Virginia Tech?
Well, this has happened before. I mean, I remember in the late 60s, a guy got up on a clock tower at the University
in
of
Austin
and started firing at people. And then you had the kids in that high school, Columbine. You had about two months ago, some Amish were killed. Obviously, there's peaceful people in the world, et cetera, et cetera. These things happen, and you have what they call going postal. You know, guys in the post office blow their lid, et cetera. I don't think anything really can be done about it. I mean, obviously, you can tighten up the gun laws as to who gets guns, et cetera, but America has something like 210 million guns loose, both legally and illegally. So you're not going to stop in America where the right to bear arms is protected by the Constitution. You're just simply not going to stop it. But what we saw in the case of this guy Cho in Virginia Tech was that the authorities in the school should have you know, put them under psychiatric treatment a long time ago. That's obvious. I mean, that's clearly coming out.
Okay. Do you think? I mean, I understand that we are protected by the Constitution, but constitutions can be amended. Do you see within the next, not soon, but maybe, you know, culture might change, and maybe like in the next 10, 15, 20 years, we might have an amendment to the Constitution, because definitely the government that we have now would love nothing more than seeing the guns being routed from the hands of its citizens. Do you see that we might use what took place at Virginia Tech as the Australians used what took place in Port Arthur massacre in 1996 and established the laws to prohibit private gun owning?
Well, I certainly elements, both right-wing and liberal, who are in favor of gun control will try to use this to restrain the people's rights to guns. I mean, I'm sure of that. I mean, they're already talking about that. But getting guns suppressed in the United States is very difficult for two reasons. Number one, there are a lot of people who have guns, and they feel they have the right to have guns. They're perfectly ordinary, decent people, and they have the gun to protect their homes and so on and so forth. They're going to resist any politician that tries to take it away. And then you have elements both on the right and the left that don't want to give up the right to guns. I mean, let me put it this way. The government of the United States has committed many crimes in its history. I mean, I remind you that John F. Kennedy wiretapped Martin Luther King, right? And just to cite one. Put 140,000 Japanese in concentration camps during the war, Japanese citizens of the United States. So there are a lot of people on the left who feel that, there's a limit to what this government can do as long as they know that there are people out there with guns that will resist the worst kind of things that they're thinking of. And I would remind you that during the Cold War, they already established empty concentration camps for when and if there would be a war, that they would be putting people in concentration camps. So you don't want the government of the United States to be the only people in the United States with guns. You want the people to have guns. And you have Thomas Jefferson not only believed in guns, he believed that shooting was a better sport than playing with a ball, because shooting improved your vision. You learn to take aim at things, et cetera, et cetera. So it's going to be very hard for them to use this to suppress the basic right of a peaceful citizen to have a gun. On the other hand, like you say, you don't want lunatics to have guns. So, you know, I can see that.
Very good. Lenny, stay with us. When I come back, we're going to tackle... you mentioned Zionism back in the 1930s. We're going to talk about that, and then we'll talk about what's going on in the Middle East. So we will be right back.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific. And it's a
healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free. 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
Summer is once again just around the corner, and as usual, so are higher gas prices. This year, stop taking it on the chin and start fighting back.
Ethos FR, a product tested and found worthy by NBC and Fox News, can save you up to 9% on fuel and reduce emissions by up to 30%. Unlike other products and gadgets you've seen advertised, Ethos FR attacks this problem. Unburned fuel. You see, exhaust is essentially unburned fuel that's expelled from your tailpipe. That equates to toxins being released into the environment and dollars being released from your wallet. But with Ethos FR, fuel burns more completely, helping your engine to deliver better mileage and helping you to save money. And it's so easy to use. Simply pour a couple of ounces into your tank at every fill-up, and you're on your way to saving money and the environment. Do yourself and the environment a favor and visit ctsavegas.com to get your bottle today. That's ctsavegas.com.
Hi, Steve Shank, Fearless Task Force. The J. Michael Stevens Group is shipping a lot of storable food. It's smart that you're getting going at your food supplies. 1 week after the report came out that the world had eaten more food than it produced last, the country turned into a deep freeze, wiping out a huge part of the new crop. An example? In 24 hours, Clementine oranges doubled in price. If you intend to start or finish your supply, call immediately. When you call, tell them how many adults and how many years of food you need. When there are shortages, missing items will be substituted, maintaining the quantity of food necessary. Money is not the problem. Availability is. Be careful. When food supplies get short, no future, many retailers ship real trash to supply you. For safe food you can trust, call 800-409-5633 on the web, efoodsdirect.com. 800-409-5633.
Back, ladies and gentlemen. My guest is Lenny Brenner. We are going to tackle the issue of Zionism. Lenny, tell me about Zionism and anti-Semitism prior to the Holocaust. A lot of people think that anti-Semitism may be something started after the Holocaust and after Israel was established, but as a matter of fact, it is not. Tell me about Zionism before the Holocaust and after.
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. Theodor Herzl is, of course, the founder of the World Zionist Organization, and he was very explicit in talking about what basically what Zionism was all about. You had millions of Jews in the Tsarist Empire, and which was Russia, Poland, the Ukraine, etc., and they, along with everybody else in the Tsarist Empire, were denied equality before the law and so on and so forth. In their particular case, you had pogroms against the Jews. In other words, armed attacks by anti-Semites organized by the secret police and so on and so forth. And millions of Jews began to emigrate out of the Tsarist Empire. My mother was born in the Tsarist Empire, and she came here as a six-year-old in 1913. When I was born in 1937, New York City was 29% Jewish. You know, and this is a city that was set up by the Dutch, and it was English, and so on and so forth. And all of a sudden, Jews just poured in by the boatload, along with Italians and Poles and so on and so forth. Now, what Herzl, as these Jews emigrated, the question came up of rights for Jews in America and in other countries. And basically what Herzl did was he went to the imperialists, starting with the Tsar, the anti-Semites, and said, look, you want the Jews out of your country for whatever reasons. We, the Zionists, want them in Palestine. That's their homeland. So let's do a deal. And the more Jews that I get to go off to Zionism, the less Jews that you have fighting in your own country for human rights. So that was what Zionism was all about from on the T-shirt. In other words, Herzl talks about it in the Jewish state and so on and so forth. When, for example, the big explosion of anti-Semitism broke out in the Tsarist Empire after the Russian Revolution. You had about 60,000 Jews were murdered in pogroms for being Jews, not for their politics or anything like that. In the Ukraine, Eastern Poland, and in Russia. And they were killed by Ukrainian nationalists and by the Tsarist government. And the Tsarist government was being backed, or what was left of the Tsarist government, the Tsarist armies. In other words, you have the February 1917 revolution. The Tsar is overthrown, but the army is still in existence. Then you have the Bolshevik Revolution in November of 1917. Some of the army goes over to the Bolsheviks, but some of it becomes right-wing terrorist army. Well, now those armies, those Tsarist terrorist armies, were armed and paid by the British government. Because they were the British government was anti-communist and the Tsar was anti-communist. At the same time that they were supporting the British were supporting the anti-Semites in Russia, they were supporting Zionism in Palestine. And Winston Churchill wrote an article in a public newspaper in 1921 in which he said, look, the Jews are going to go one way or the other. There's either Leon Trotsky's plot for Jewish domination of the world, communism, or Zionism. So he supported Zionism. Then Hitler comes to power, and at that moment it became nonstop support for Zionism. Now, it reached a point where in 1933 the German Zionist Federation sent a document to the Nazis. In which
let me
just find it here. Here we go.
Okay.
In which they openly said that they wanted to work with the Nazi government on the basis of their mutual opposition.
Okay. Lenny, stay with me. We're gonna catch it after the break. Stay with me. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
There is one and only one national populist news weekly, staffed by an unsurpassed team of veteran investigative journalists who have dared to rip the veil of deception from the cover-up stories promoted by the big money-controlled media monopoly.
American Free Press.
AFP's no-holds-barred journalists fearlessly seek the truth, no matter how controversial the issue. AFP publishes in-depth, uncensored news and information good patriotic Americans need to know to combat the coming police state being clamped in our republic. The American Free Press is your voice. Subscribe today and catch up on the real news. Mention RBN, you call and receive a one-year subscription, plus a copy of Michael Collins Piper's latest bestseller, The High Priests of War. All that for just $49? Call AFP toll-free, 888-699-NEWS, or visit AmericanFreePress.net.
Stay connected to what's happening at the Republic Broadcasting Network by visiting our website,
www.rbnlive.com. at rbnlive.com. You'll stay up to date with our latest broadcast schedule, learn about upcoming events, read about our air personalities and the programs they host, take part in discussion forums, read the latest breaking news, and listen to RBN programs on your computer by connecting to our live broadcast stream. Plus, you can download previous RBN programs from the archive completely free of charge. That's right. On live services, there is no charge to download programs from the RBN archive. Share them freely with others who are not yet listeners to the Republic Broadcasting Network, and help spread the word. We're taking America back through the power of innovation. Stay connected to the Republic Broadcasting Network and our website, rbnlive.com. With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing how to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power. Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you, and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today, 1-800-691-7898, and let Noel or Jeff Bennett help you see through the fog. When you support Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit an improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Lenny, I have a question for you on Zionism and Adolf Hitler. As we know from your own writing, I'm seeing that Adolf Hitler, as his father, thought of anti-Semitism as a leftover religious prejudice. And you're saying that we're told that Adolf Hitler very much looked at it that way. What was the relationship between Adolf Hitler and the Zionists, and when did Germany have this split, or the Nazis have this split with Zionism? At one time, I understand, Zionism was working with the Nazis?
Yeah. Let me read you from a Zionist statement that they sent to the Nazis, the German Zionist Federation, the Zionistische Vereinigung für Deutschland, sent to the Nazis on June 21st, 1933. And the translation that I'm reading from is by Lucy Davidovich, who's a very well, she's dead now, but she was a very well-known Jewish historian, and no doubt about the authenticity of the document. It was first published in German in Israel in 1963. Okay? Now, I'm just reading excerpts. This is the Zionists to the Nazis. It is our opinion that an answer to the Jewish question truly satisfying to the national state can be brought about only with the collaboration of the Jewish movement that aims at a social, cultural, and moral renewal of Jewry. Indeed, that such a national renewal must first be the decisive social and spiritual premises for all solutions. Our acknowledgement of Jewish nationality provides for a clear and sincere relationship to the German people and its national and racial realities, precisely because we do not wish to falsify these fundamentals, because we too are against mixed marriage and are for maintaining the purity of the Jewish group and reject any trespass of the cultural domain. And then it goes on, for its practical aims, Zionism hopes to be able to win the collaboration even of a government fundamentally hostile to Jews, because in dealing with the Jewish question, no sentimentalities are involved, but a real problem whose solution interests all people in the present moment, especially the German people. Now, let me put it this way. After World War II, there were a lot of fellows in Europe who got hung by the neck until dead because they sent letters like this to the Nazis. You know, hi, We want to collaborate with you. But this was a letter actually sent by the Zionist Federation in Germany to the Nazis. Hi, we want to collaborate with you. And the basis of it was this opposition to mixed marriage. All right? And, you know, this is now this goes very deep into Orthodox Judaism, all right? I was born into an Orthodox Jewish family, and my mother kept telling me again and again and again, you know, you got to marry a Jew, you got to marry a Jew, you got to marry a Jew. You know, I abandoned that and thought for myself and married or slept with whoever I want to, so to speak. But the point is that what Zionism did was it elevated this marry a Jew into a fixed principle, and when the Nazis came along and said, we don't want Germans marrying Jews, the Zionists said, that's wonderful, because we don't want Jews marrying Germans, so let's do a deal. Now, they literally worked out an agreement called the Ha'avara, which means, in English, the transfer, and what they did was this. If you were a German Jew, let's say you had 20,000 Reichmarks. Now, you wanted to get out of the country because Hitler just came to power. All right? And now, anybody, Jew, Gentile, it didn't matter. If you were a German and you wanted to get out of the country with money, then the German government took away about 40% of your money as you went out the door. Because this was they did this under the Weimar Republic, and they continued to do it under the Nazis, all right? So the Zionists and the Nazis worked out a deal. If a German Jew had 20,000 Reichmarks, what he would do was he would hand it over, the 20,000 Reichmarks, over to the Nazis. The Nazis would send, let us say, I'm just trying to use round numbers now, 80,000 Reichmarks worth of steel pipes to Palestine, where the Zionists in Palestine, the World Zionist Organization in Palestine, would then sell the pipes. Now, the German Jew would arrive in Palestine, and he would get, let us say, 15,000, the equivalent of 15,000 Reichmarks in British pounds, because Palestine was run by the British at that time. Now, that was a nick of 25%, but that was still cheaper than going out the door to New York City, where they would knock off 40%. You understand the principle involved. Okay. All right. So now the reason why the Nazis did it was, number one, they wanted to get rid of Jews, but at that time Hitler just came to power. He knew he couldn't start killing Jews right away. It was impossible, because under the Treaty of Versailles, Germany had hardly any army, and he had to build up his army before he could go to war and start killing Jews and, you know, all that. The finer points of Nazism, so to speak. So he wanted the Jews out of there. But the problem was that Jews were major players in the economy of the world. Like I said earlier in the show, Jews were 29% of the people in New York City, which is a major market for German goods, et cetera, et cetera. And then Jews were major players in the markets in Eastern Europe, et cetera, et cetera. So what Hitler was worried about was a boycott of German goods by Jews, which was a spontaneous thing. But from June 1933 on, the Zionists were selling German goods in the Middle East, not only in Palestine. Like, they would sell. I'm using steel pipes because that was one of the things that the Germans sent to the Zionists. They would sell those steel pipes to whoever wanted to buy them in, let's say, Iraq or Lebanon or wherever, you know. I mean, all of this, rather than fighting the Nazis, you know, organizing opposition to the Nazis, they were trading with the Nazis. And they finally invited the head of the SS's German or a Jewish office, Count Leopold von Mildenstein, to Palestine as their guest. And he wrote up his visit to Palestine as the guest of the Zionists in Goebbels' newspaper, Der Angriff.
Okay.
Now, by the way, your readers can read the article that von Mildenhain wrote in my latest book, 51 Documents Zionist Collaboration with the Nazis, which they can get by contacting me at BrennerL21@AOL.com.
Just for the sake of time, what role did the Zionist play in what we know today as the Holocaust? What role did they play in that?
Well, they played several roles. Number one, in most of Poland, like in the Warsaw Ghetto, the Jew who was appointed by the Nazis to be the head Jew, so to speak, the head collaborator, was a Zionist, etc. The worst situation was in Hungary, where Rishu Kastner, the head of the Labor Zionists, directly collaborated person to person with Adolf Eichmann in return for keeping quiet and not warning the Jews that they were going to be murdered in Auschwitz. This is the Hungarian Jews in 1944. Eichmann permitted Kastner to organize a train load of high prominent Jews and celebrity Jews and stuff like that, and you know, and his family and so on and so forth, and send them to Switzerland, and they were trying to Eichmann was trying to use Kastner to try to do a last-minute deal with the Zionists and the British as the German regime was collapsing.
So you're saying the Zionists wanted to get rid of some certain Jews? Is that what you're saying?
Well, in other words, Eichmann came to this man Kastner, the Zionist Kastner, and said, look, you keep quiet about what I'm going to do. I'll let you pick 1,400 Jews for this train to go to Switzerland. I don't care who they are. You pick them. So he picked prominent Zionists, but he picked non-Zionists as well. He picked prominence for this train, in return for which he kept quiet about what the Nazis were going to do to the Hungarian Jews.
But what the Nazis were going to do to the Hungarian Jews.
Right. He kept... What were they going to do? They were going to ship them to Auschwitz and gas them, which they did do.
Okay. Now, where did the 6 million figure comes from?
Okay. Eichmann told the Zionists, who he sent to Turkey to negotiate with the Zionists and the British, that he had killed 6 million Jews. Eichmann said that. Then, that was in June of 1944.
That was
then,
from...
Later, in November of 1944, when Eichmann's commando was breaking up because they were going into hiding, they had a farewell party, you know, with the schnapps and stuff like that. And he said 5 million Jews. Okay? Now, after the war, the American prosecutor at Nuremberg, he chose the 6 million number. Now, the Zionists had nothing to do with it. He chose it, American prosecutor. After the war, Jewish scholars have done research on it, and the best number that they can come up with is between 5 and 6 million Jews.
Okay, and that was from what year, what period? Like, it started, what, 1949?
Well, the specifically killing Jews as Jews really started in 1941.
So 1941, and the war ended when, 1942?
In 1945.
Okay, so within 4 years, you're saying that the Nazis killed... Okay, let's take the lower number.
Over five million Jews, for sure, for sure. Okay. Because when they invaded the Soviet Union,
the Jewish population
of
Europe,
murdering Jews, they just started shooting them.
Okay, what was the total population of Europe? Jewish population of Europe at that time? Do you have any?
About 14 million.
About 14 million.
Yeah.
Where'd you get that number from?
You have censuses in most of those countries. I mean, you know, in other words, the Polish census, the Hungarian census.
So to kill that many people, 5 million people, that should have been systematically done, which would have been somebody would had to give the order to. Do you have, from your research, do you have any orders that were that came down, let's say, from Hitler?
Yes, we know that there was a big meeting in early 1942 in which they sat down and decided everything. But Hitler had this kind of funny mentality. Hitler thought he could get away with it, you know, killing all those Jews. But you never know. You know, you're in a war, et cetera. And he had the experience of the slaughter of the Armenians in World War One, et cetera.
By the Turks.
By the Turks, right.
Right.
So there's no written order. But on the other hand, we have Eichmann's statements in which he talks about, you know, this meeting that they had with Hitler. And, you know, Eichmann was the techie, we would call him today. You know, I mean, he was the man that really, you know, moved the Jews from, let's say, France or Italy or Hungary to Poland. Now, they went for the gassing because, by the way, Eichmann decided that shooting all those Jews, that the guys who did the shooting, you didn't want them back in Germany after the war. These guys would be the ultimate sadists. I mean, they, you know, you're putting murderers on the street. So you had to
Do you know how many survivors of the Holocaust after the war was ended? Do you have a number of how many survived, how many Jews survived the Holocaust?
It's hard to say. Again, you're using the census numbers. You had
I'm just wondering, like a ballpark figure. I mean, how many? 5 million, 10 million survived?
Well, I mean, again, it depends on where you're using. Like, for example, in Bulgaria, none of the Jews were the Bulgarian government wouldn't hand over Jews. Okay. In Denmark, the Danish
who's qualified
Jews to Norway.
Okay.
I would say about 8 million Jews survived.
Okay.
Mostly in the Soviet Union, Bulgaria, France, et cetera.
Lenny, we hear about a lot of people. I mean, almost every other person you meet is a Holocaust survivor. Now, who's qualified to be labeled as a Holocaust survivor? Any Jew in Europe or only those who were in the concentration camps and came out?
No, I would say any Jew in Poland is a Holocaust survivor because they either went into a concentration camp or they went into hiding or they fled into the Soviet Union. Like, for example, Menachem Begin fled from Poland into Lithuania. He was captured by the Soviets in Lithuania, sent into Siberia, then released, sent to on and on and on like that, you know.
Now, if that was what was happening, why would the Nazis in their concentration camps have schools for the Jews, have, you know, they were doing like art and crafts, and a lot of those who survived the camps actually came out to be like good artists in the, you know, some in the movies, some in the music field and stuff. Why would they go through, and also they had like clinics and all this stuff that was in these camps where Jews were actually treated? Why would you have all these activities going on in the camps if the idea was to kill them?
Well, you had several different kinds of camps. For example, in Czechoslovakia, you had Theresienstadt, which was exactly what you were talking about. In other words, this was a concentration camp for prominent Jews who were sent there for one reason or another because of their prominence. For example, the mayor of New York, Fiorello LaGuardia, was half Jewish, and his sister was captured by the Nazis and sent to Theresienstadt. And she survived the war because she was Mayor LaGuardia's sister and was too important to be killed by the Nazis.
Lenny, I want you to stay with me. We're going to take a break. Ladies and gentlemen, you are welcome to call in. The number is 800-313-9443. We'll be right back.
Wow, that coffee smells really good.
Hey, it's terrific, and it's healthy.
Healthy coffee. How does it taste?
Well, since healthy coffee blends are pre-brewed from organic Arabica beans, they're delicious.
Gosh, I had no idea coffee could be healthy.
Yeah, this coffee boosts your immunity, has 165 antioxidants for all kinds of health benefits. Plus, it gives you energy without a lot of caffeine. And since you're a big coffee drinker, I thought, well, maybe you'd want to know about it.
It sounds great, but how much does it cost?
Well, not much at all, really. A whole lot less than we've been paying for ordinary coffee at the coffee shop.
Wow, I'd love to try it, and I bet everyone at the office would, too. Where do I get some?
Just call toll-free, 866-222-3017, or you can go to coffeeking.biz. Ask for a sample when you're there, or get set up as a preferred customer with a 25% discount. I did.
Okay, that's toll-free, 866-222-3017, or coffeeking.biz. I'll do it now. Thanks.
We've all considered solar power at one time or another, and self-sufficiency will be your key to a better future. Ken Solar can help you get off the grid and become self-sufficient with solar power, and for a lot less than you would think. One of Ken's most popular items right now is the new solar power generator, for a lot less than you'd expect. This portable system can chop off nearly a third of your electric bill, a good start for any families out there wanting to get solar power for your home. Visit Ken's website at kensolar.com for free downloads, free videos, and how-tos, and of course, the new solar power generator. Use the coupon code RBN with your purchase and save an additional 10% off your order. Get a solar power generator now from kensolar.com at 239-677-3073. Again, that's 239-677-3073 or on the web at kensolar.com. Ken Solar, the home of all your solar needs.
Are you paying exorbitant amounts of interest to your mortgage lender? We as Americans have been led down a path of paying excessive amounts of interest to the lending institutions. Stop paying tens of thousands of dollars in mortgage interest and start saving. Our financial experts have spent 2 years and about $2 million on a revolutionary interest reduction solution that will show you how to pay off 100% of your mortgage and other debt in as little as 8 to 11 years with no change to your current lifestyle or spending habits. No increase to your monthly mortgage payments, no refinancing, and no out-of-pocket expense. That's right. Take 19 to 22 years off your 30-year mortgage. This is not a bi-weekly payment program or a debt roll-down program. It's much more. Sound too good to be true? Find out just how good. Visit interestreductionsolutions.com or call 1-800-281-5094. That's 1-800-281-5094. Ask about our free DVD and financial analysis report.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Our guest is Lenny Brenner. Lenny, I want to jump ahead to what is happening now. The Arabs have extended a hand of peace towards the Israelis, and Olmert said that, talking about the right of return for the Palestinians who were kicked out of their land back in 1948, what are your thoughts on the right of return for the Palestinians? It seems to be a sticky situation where it's almost there's no peace will take place between the Arabs and the Israelis if the right of return is insisted on by the Arabs. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. Olmert's attitude is, hey, we're not responsible for the Palestinian refugees because the Palestinian refugees fled because the Arab governments told them to flee, so leave us alone. That's his line, all right? I mean, that's literally what he is quoted as saying in the New York Times on, I'm looking now for the, on April 1st, okay? But here's what we know, all right? In 1979, Yitzhak Rabin wrote his memoirs in Hebrew. Now, they were censored. We know that they were censored because there was an article on the censorship in 1979. But then when he died in 1996, the University of California Press, you know, a major university press, ran the census portion of what he's talking about. Now, this is a note from this. I'm reading now from the University of California the uncensored Rabin memoir. There's a note. This is from the University of California. The following passage describing the forced eviction of Arabs from Lod and Ramla during the 1948 War of Independence was omitted from the first edition of the memoirs. It should follow the words, "To secure our gains around the road to Jerusalem," on page 35, line 3. Now, here's what was cut from the Hebrew version, but it's in the English version, and you know, your listeners can get it from the University of California, you know. Okay, this is a quote. "While the fighting was still in progress, we had to grapple with a troublesome problem for whose solution we could not draw upon any previous experience, the fate of the civilian population of Lod and Ramla, numbering some 50,000. Not even Ben-Gurion could offer any solution, and during the discussions at operational headquarters, he remained silent. Clearly, we could not leave Lod's hostile and armed populace in our rear, where it could endanger the supply route to Yiftach, which is another brigade, which was advancing eastward. We walked outside, Ben-Gurion accompanying us. Alon repeated his question, 'What is to be done with the population?' Ben-Gurion waved his hand in a gesture which said, 'Drive them out.' Alon and I held a consultation. I agreed that it was essential to drive the inhabitants out. We took them on foot towards the Beth Horon Road, assuming that the legion that..." Now he's talking about the Jordanian legion. "We assumed that the legion would be obliged to look after them, therefore showing them logistic difficulties which could burden the fighting capacity."
Lenny, we're coming to the end of the hour, but I would like you to stay with me for another 15 minutes of the second hour. So we can talk about the right of return. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will be back in a couple of minutes to continue this with Lenny Brenner. We will be right back.